Welcome to episode number 4 of Cacao with Pranamora, the podcast. We are sitting here in Costa Rica sipping a delicious cacao smoothie, very rich in cacao today. So welcome, welcome, welcome.
Welcome to today's episode, also from my side. And today is going to be super exciting because we are exploring one question that is probably one of the most asked questions among us people that are moving towards the spiritual space or are in the spiritual space, and anyone that likes to get deeper meaning or find deeper meaning in life. And the question is, what is my purpose?
It's such a good topic. And when we were sitting this morning actually having cacao smoothie bowls, cacao twice a day because that's just how we are as Pranamora, and we were sitting there contemplating our episode topic for today, and we unanimously decided together that talking about purpose is one of the most universally common themes in many of our lives. It's something as humans that we mull over and ponder time and time again, and it gets refined over and over. So that is what we are here to share and discuss today.
And the thing is that once you start asking yourself the question, you cannot stop anymore. You know, it's like many of these things. Once you start doing it, start getting into it, you know, once you start embarking on a spiritual journey, once you start embarking on a personal growth, personal development journey, it's something like you can never stop doing. It just keeps going and keeps going and keeps going. And so I think I haven't really found for myself the answer to the question if there is necessarily answer of what is my purpose. Like, that is just one answer, and it always is like that. I know there are some people that apparently found the one purpose that they have, and it's true for their whole life. But also I saw many, many people where it wasn't like that.
And it changes and it gets refined over time. And I what I really love is that this question sparks so much joy when we find those bits of reminders that we're on the right track, right? When we do something that we love, and it's creating so much passion, so much excitement from within. So really excited to dive into this topic. And our goal is that at the end of this episode, you have more direction for your purpose and perhaps follow that drive and that motivation to go forward into what you truly desire.
Yeah, it's basically that we are sharing our journeys that are also, yeah, really different, with many different facets. And I think, you know, for me, speaking for me personally, I always like to hear people's stories. That's how I get inspired. That's how I learn. That's how I expand my horizon. So it's just like different people sharing what they figured out for themselves. And then if many people do that, then you listen to all these people and you share your own and bring your own experiences in the mix, then I think it's a really cool blend and cool way to find out better answers for yourself. So we're just sharing what we did, our journeys, what we found out, what we learned from other people, what we learned from mentors. And yeah, we are excited.
So let's dive right in. Okay, so when did you start inquiring, having that self-inquiry about your purpose?
Oh, that's a question I wasn't prepared for to answer, to be honest.
That's why we are here. Surprise.
Yeah, I know. We don't have any, what is it called?
Bullet points
or plans or a script or anything. It's really spontaneous always, which is cool, authentic. So you caught me a little bit off guard, but let me think about it. So I think, the purpose. I think for me, I started looking for it already before I knew I was. And I started looking for it before I did it consciously. You know, for example, I mean, I can tell you, and it's kind of funny because at the end, like where I am now, is kind of more related to where I was as a child than the journey in between. So it's kind of like I had a circle moment and I kind of circled back to what I was already more doing as a child. You want to know?
Yes. And I just want to touch upon that point of how cool it is that you are back to where, you know, you felt a joy spark as a child, because so many of us get caught into that adult cycle of my purpose must be that, you know, very adult. And
yeah,
perhaps it doesn't always have to be that way. So just throwing a little...
Totally. To give away one nugget of learning, experience, advice, whatever, already now, is that in this whole journey of finding purpose, probably one of the most important thing is to reawake that childlike joy and curiosity and playfulness.
Is that why you got Wunder tattooed on your forearm there?
I can tell you about that later.
That's
Having that
childlike wonder. That's, we got to circle back to that.
Okay. It's easy to see, so you remember.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just to answer your question or my previous point. When I was a child, I was already exploring many things of, how I can... At the end, how I can share my gifts with the world. I just didn't really know that at that time. So I was doing a lot of, music things. I was really interested in art and in music. And I think this is probably for many kids, they like to draw and all that. But for me, it was really like art and painting and crafting and drawing and creativity. So creativity was a big part. And then, I did some early kind of like child music courses or something like that before I, at the end, started learning how to play guitar when I was a teenager, much later. But so I have photos, and I've refound these photos. I didn't even remember, but I have photos of me. And they're on my website, by the way. I have photos of me where I play all these toy instruments. It's so funny. It's like I have this like toy saxophone and the toy guitar and the toy mini piano. And I don't even know if all of them made sound. But and I have photos where I pose like a rock star, like completely. And I make costumes.
I saw those photos.
It's so funny. I made the funniest costumes, just like really random, weird things. So it was all about expression and self-expression, creativity and entertainment and all these things. And actually, pretty much all these things kind of got a little bit lost or dimmed down over the next years and, decade or so. But that's another story. That for now.
I really resonate with that, of what you said about circling back to what really lit you up and got you excited as a child. Because for me too, I was always in nature. That was something I connected with as a young girl. And I was playing with a tape recorder. It was a Fisher Price, it's an American brand, tape recorder from the 80s. So I'm an 80s baby. And I would sit at home in my bedroom for hours. I remember that I can actually describe the carpet on the floor and, how I would sit there on this very soft rug in my room for hours recording myself sing from The Little Mermaid and other Disney movies, and I would record, and then I'd have another tape recorder that I would also record on. And so I basically would create my own personal loop station from different tape recorders. So I would sing with one and then record on another and then record on another. So I had this a cappella of myself singing Disney theme songs.
So I just had the impulse to share one reflection on that, because so if we go step by step along the journey of the podcast, to kind of like capture different bullet points or advice, points of advice or whatever you want to call it. So the number one learning for me would be, for adults that are searching for answers to the question, what is my purpose now in the adult life? One key help could be to go back to your childhood mentally and remember, what did you do? What sparked joy? What skills did you have? And what passions did you have, and what did you do in your, day-to-day life, like you just described?
And that's so big, because I remember I sat there with, no question in my head, was this fun? Of course it was fun. I was having a blast. And I think sometimes as adults, we question whether things are meant to make money, or my purpose must be, if it's not making money, then, and it's just so much fun, I don't get it. How is that really my purpose? And I think as a child, you have so much wonder and curiosity, and you're just having a blast, that's you know that that's what you're meant to do that day.
Yeah, that's another really good point. That first of all, we got to find out what's our purpose or what gifts we have to share, independently of thinking about how we can earn money with it, how I can make money. And I know this is probably one of the most challenging things to do, because in an adult world, in this reality today, it's all about, of course, how can you pay your bills? How can you pay your rent? It's all about how can you do something that sustains your day-to-day life. And that's a totally valid question. And at the same time, there's so much magic possible in opening up when you ask yourself the question, first of all, and find it out what you love to do, what's your purpose, what gifts you have to share, all these questions, independently of how much money that would make, if that would make, if you have any idea how that would make money, because that's all secondary. And at the end, if you really find a true calling, then the universe will definitely find ways how you can also receive abundance by sharing that.
I want to circle back to your childhood story in a moment, and also emphasize that exactly that point that you're saying is that, you know, it will, in fact, make the abundance come through very easily when you are doing what you love. And an example of that, for example, is when I was playing with my childhood loop station singing Disney songs. Now, today, I sing mantra and spiritual songs of devotion, and I am starting to post those on Insight Timer and other avenues. And without even thinking about it, and we mentioned this in one of the prior episodes, I've received such beautiful feedback and donations for these tracks of breath work with some sound healing and mantra. And it gives so much joy to my heart to create these that I'm not thinking about any income. I just want it to touch the hearts of the people that are listening and tuning in. So that's one of the most beautiful tokens of doing something that is aligned with your purpose, is that you would do it either way.
Yeah, and one other touch on that is that, so there are two options generally. Option number one is that you do whatever you feel is your purpose. You fulfill that role, you share your gift with the world, you do whatever you feel is that, and you receive abundance for that. You have your income and money related to it, like, directly. And option number two is that you do your calling and you do share your gifts and you do all that, and you have abundance coming to you via another way. Because sometimes some things might really be some things that, yeah, it's just not directly tied to any income or money or things like that. So for example, let's say there's a person that's volunteering in an animal shelter, you know, putting all their heart and soul into it, or maybe even building it themselves. Either way, there can be these kind of things that are not directly tied to money because it's not your job and you don't get income from that, but then maybe you have something else like that brings you income, you know, being it a big inheritance or being it another job or whatever it is. So it doesn't always need to be connected, like your purpose and the actual activity doesn't always need to be connected to making money directly from that.
I love that. It takes a lot of pressure off as humans. You know, a lot of the times we say, oh, well, if I don't have the abundance, then I can't be the musician that I want to be, or this or that. And if we tie it all to money all the time, there's a lot of disheartening that could happen. And I know that it's happened with myself sometimes, where I know what my purpose is, very clear, and doing little steps along the way that are aligned with that purpose, and doing the other jobs and, you know, things on the side that also, you know, consulting for a retreat center, for example, might not be my purpose of being, you know, a musician and facilitating breathwork and being on stage and doing that. However, I'm able to make beautiful connections in the world and bring leaders and hosts and guests together in that way. It's also fulfilling my purpose of being a connector. So I think purpose can be multifaceted as you are as a human. There's different aspects to your purpose, and you can explore those as you go along.
Yeah, so I think it's really important and very helpful for many, many people probably to say that there you can even have not two lives, but you can even have like the traditional traditional journey and like a normal like 9-to-5 job, and the job might not even be very exciting to you necessarily. It's just like something, okay, you know, you make a living and you have a stable income and that feels good for you. And then you use that comfort and that security and the abundance to then on the side do something that actually really fulfills you, because that's what it's all about, right? Looking for what is your purpose, what is fulfilling you, like what is giving you a fulfilled life and makes you feel, oh, you do something that you contribute, that you have fun, you have joy, you do something meaningful. And that doesn't need to be your main job. That's what I found also for myself along the way. It can also be that you do that because that's just what is sustaining you. And then you find other ways beside that where you can do things like, you know, sharing your art or volunteering or whatever it is, or making music and not becoming a millionaire rock star. You know, all these kind of things that, still give you meaning and fulfillment, and you live your purpose and you say still have, you know, like a normal 9-to-5 job, for example.
And that's helped me so much. And there's moments where I want to focus a lot of energy on creation and having that be more of a passion project rather than needing to get paid for it. It gives me a lot of pleasure to just create for the sake of creating the art, creating the magic. And at the same time, having something else that sustains my revenue, like a consulting project or something that where I'm supporting someone else as well. And so circling back to your childhood dream of being a rock star, or being a musician, contributing your music and your art and your gifts, what happened along the way from then to now?
Well, I actually didn't even share what I wanted to be as a child.
Mm. I just, you know, guessed it because you were dressing up in costumes with instruments. So,
to be honest, so I didn't remember about these photos. And when I refound them, I was like, okay, wow, you know, that's like the total rock star kind of thing. And the funny thing, though, is that I never remember being a musician or like doing that. It was a dream of me. I still remember, for example, I thought this one. So in our town, so I'm from a small town, and I remember on weekends there was this guy in the what's it called, in the on the streets where all the stores are. Yeah. So there was this like little plaza and the tree in the middle, and there was this guy playing music, and he was so cool because he literally was like a one man band, and he built it for himself. So he was probably maybe playing like 4 instruments at a time or something. He had like drums, and then he had something strapped on his back, and he had a guitar and a harmonica in front of his face, and then he was using all of his body parts, and he was so cool. And I generally like to see like street musicians, and that's kind of cool for me. But I don't remember at all that I wanted to be like a music star or something. What my first childhood dreams were, and that was really funny, they were really mixed. So I wanted to become a soccer professional, for sure, because early on I started playing in clubs, and you know, that's what I was watching, you know, soccer games like football. And then additionally to that, I also liked firefighters, and I like construction guys. I think that's kind of funny because
you kind of are that right now.
That's what I played with my friends, you know.
Kind of are a construction guy right now.
Yeah, also building our house. They're really funny. No, but I think for me, these were probably because there were strong male role models, you know. Like you see the man, you know, and the construction guys and the firefighters. And these are all like, you know, very, you know, strong man professions in that sense. So I think I just liked that as a child, as a little boy, you know, seeing these men like do what men do, you know.
So cute.
Yeah. So that wasn't even tied to any fame or any necessarily a lot of money. But yeah, these were my first like dreams. I think the biggest one was probably to become a soccer star, which is probably also not very unique, very uncommon. It's more like common for many boys to want to become soccer stars.
And then what happened? What happened along the way from then till now? What happened as you dabbled into the tech world and entrepreneurship world? Because there was a little detour.
Yeah, but first I want to know what your childhood dreams were, because I don't even know if I know.
Well, they were, I didn't know at the time what a healer, what the word for a healer was, though it was, I wanted to help people. And I thought that that meant a doctor, which funny enough, I went to school for biomedical engineering because I ultimately wanted to work with children who were limited by, for example, a wheelchair or a walker, kids with different disabilities. And I worked in, or I volunteered in high school at a place, it was a hippotherapy place, which means equine therapy. So physical therapy and occupational therapy for children on horses. And I was obsessed with horses growing up, and I really loved their healing power. And so I thought, oh, okay, I'm going to study biomedical engineering so I can develop devices and prosthetics for kids to be in the Special Olympics. And my dream was to work with Nike and to work with the Paralympic Games. And ultimately, I wanted to actually help them, and I really enjoyed being with the children most of all.
But that was much later on. So what was, as a child, like?
Okay, this was more like high school, but
yeah, before, as a child, how did it start?
As a little child, I wanted to be, there were many things. One was a writer. So my mom always had these journals for me growing up, and then I would write books, and I would enter competitions, and I would do public speaking events and talk on my books. And I did a lot of public speaking and presentations, which I didn't like at first, and then I ended up loving it. So I wanted to be an author, a presenter, though I remember thinking, I don't know what, how this was programmed in, but that couldn't be a career, that a career was like doctor, lawyer, engineer, something of caliber. I can remember those words from my mom, you know, like, what could you do with that major, you know? So I had this idea in my head that, oh, those are just fun things that you do on the side, right? Like, oh, you could be a doctor and then write a book, or, you know, be an engineer and then do those fun things on the side. And so when I learned that I wanted to be something as a healer related, I really didn't, wasn't in the spiritual world that I'm in now. So I didn't know that there was ways to help people besides for having some sort of title, like being a doctor who people trust.
Okay, I get it. So at least you already had this thing of, okay, I want to help people. I want to do something for them. It's similar to what I, when I had this, you know, like creativity, expression, performing, music thing. And that's cool. So, okay. So you said that you studied.
Yes, I did study a lot.
Yeah, I know that you told me that. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would want to bring it in, but yeah, let's do it. So I just thought about the roles that our parents play in this whole journey and the choice of it. And I have to share, and also because both our journeys are very different, at the end, I didn't get to study. I did something that is called apprenticeship, which is a similar qualification level in Germany than a bachelor. But it is not a bachelor, and I didn't go to university. I wanted to, and I signed up, and longer, different story, but I didn't get to because then I started my whole freelance thing and self-employment, and which is also more similar to my parents. And your parents had a different story and journey and different jobs, and you are also the more educated, officially more educated person from both of us.
Yeah, graduated with a degree in biomedical engineering, which I am very proud of myself for getting through it. I definitely wanted to help make my parents proud. And my mom was a firstborn, what is it called when you, first generation immigrant. She had been the first one in her family to, I mean, her, all the children went to college and got really like caliber degrees. So my mom also wanted me to have that. She was very proud. That meant a lot to her.
So they were immigrants, and she was the first generation that got to the US,
yeah,
and then got and to study.
Got to study. Her mom worked in factories growing up. So she, yeah, you know, my mom being a math teacher, also before wanting to be a teacher, she also wanted to be an engineer. And my dad as well was a pilot, and he had studied physics and aerospace engineering. So I came from that background. It wasn't very entrepreneurial. It was,
although your dad didn't work as a pilot.
He did for a short time and did charter flights and aerial photography.
Okay, well, so at the
and
end,
now he astral travels a lot.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's another story.
Yeah, sending love to your dad here.
And my mom.
And your mom.
We love you if you're listening.
Of course. All our parents, actually. We love you all.
Yeah,
I didn't even get to share about mine, but I will. So your two parents, they both worked as teachers.
They both worked as teachers, exactly.
Yeah. And so for me, it was a bit different in the sense that my mom was caring about my education, and of course it was important to go to school and to learn for tests and all these things. At the same time, I felt she was much more relaxed about grades and all these things than, for example, some other parents that I witnessed from friends, you know. I mean, I guess you all know these friends where the parents like super strict about like grades and homeworks and...
Mine.
Yeah, I mean, they have all these rules and regulations and it's just like super, pretty intense. And then on the opposite scale, of course, there are parents that don't care at all, which is also not good. And I think I was somewhere in the middle with kind of both my parents, which I was grateful for because I learned... I think over the years I learned it's more about my own motivation, but that also led to the fact that I went to the best, like to good school and I got good enough grades so I could study and do all of that. But at the end, my parents, first of all, they also gave me freedom. They gave me the feeling that, okay, I don't have to, in English would be my A-levels, I don't have to get my A-levels and then go on to university and study. I don't necessarily have to do this path. And I can freely explore generally also what professions I want to do. And that was because, yeah, I think my mom was just super sweet. I love my mom.
I love her too.
Yeah, that was just because, she gave me a lot of freedom. And she still made sure, you know, I'm on track and do my homework and all these things. But I was more, relaxed than other parents. And my dad also had his own journey. Could have been many podcasts of my dad. He was having, I think, generally like pretty different journey than most people, and also not the classical education. Although he studied for a long, long time, eventually not finishing it, but I think at least, hope I get that right. But yeah, so he is living a more alternative life also. So it was pretty supportive for me to have both the parents giving me all the, open doors of, okay, yeah, you can find out what you want to do. Like, there's nothing that, okay, you have to study, you have to do this, you have to do a job that's either lawyer, doctor, or whatever, certain status, or... And also, I think they never really asked me or told me, okay, you have to do something that makes money, you know?
I think that's American, they call it the American dream, where a lot of Americans can resonate with that, at least in my generation from 80s and 90s, it's all about like, okay, striving for this American dream. You know, you get the big house, the white picket fence and the nice cars. And that was a big thing I grew up with, was that's what, a lot of people in my world.
I mean, we have the same though in Germany. So I'm from Germany. In Germany, it's not, of course, not the American dream. It's also not the German dream.
The German dream.
We wouldn't call it like that. It's just a different culture, but we definitely have this image of, yeah, and then you buy your own house and you have your car and you live like this a certain way. And like you said, you have your friends and like you have this material striving, for your material goal. And that's definitely, especially also in smaller cities, that's how I grew up with. You know, most of my friends, their parents, and they were living in kind of like nice neighborhoods, and many of them were like neighbors living in the same neighborhood. I had that in my childhood. You know, most of my friends and their parents, they were living in a nice neighborhood. Many of them were actually neighbors living close to each other, like only roads apart. And they all, pretty much, or most of them, especially their early friends, they all had their houses and their car and their steady lives and like pretty nice. And I didn't have that, but that's what I saw. And that's, especially in smaller cities also, I think that's definitely in Germany, that's the thing that you strive for still, probably.
So can you take me back to that point where you were a child and you had those dreams and then you did your apprenticeship. Then what started to shift?
Yeah, so the funny thing is, in my case, and I'll talk with my mom about it too. The funny thing is that then, so my parents gave me quite a lot of freedom. And of course, you have some like traits and skills and things, and maybe you take on from your parents. But then I developed many, many for myself. And there was this inherent motivation of me doing something to show people. And I think, I mean, looking back now, I know why, because I had a part in childhood, a phase in childhood where I had the feeling I need to prove myself, I need to prove my value and my worth and my abilities and my skills, because without going into the whole story, I had several people that were not believing in me because I had a phase where I was a bit more rough. So I wasn't really being a good child in some senses. I was still, but you know, in kindergarten.
Can you imagine Maxime Marlow with this like cute, so funny. Cute voice, like really rough?
People that know me, they wouldn't believe that I threw Shea in the kindergarten. But to my defense, it was only a certain time, and it was due to some specific reasons that we don't need to go into. But so I had the face that resulted in people seeing me that way, and it was in kindergarten a little bit. Then in elementary school, I had different phases, but also part of it where I still had to learn, you know, to become more, you know, integrated and social and gentle again, I guess. That sounds probably too intense, but, you know, anyway, the summary is that people saw me in a specific way, and that led them to think about me in a specific way, which was not necessarily very positive. And then some people were... There was a time where some people, like, what's it called in kindergarten, the staff?
The teachers?
The teachers, yeah. Do you call them teachers in kindergarten too?
Yeah.
The teachers in school, there were some that didn't believe in me, and I didn't think I would go to the good school and to get my A-levels, whatever, and to study. And so that resulted in even making this motivation in me bigger to show it to them. Mm-hmm. I want to show it to all of them.
You want to prove yourself.
I want to prove myself. Like, I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you what I'm capable of. I'm going to exceed the classic journey by far. I'm just going to do my own thing. And so this was powerful for me until a certain time. Maybe we'll get to share that about it later. But at the beginning was powerful because there's such a strong energy and a super powerful motivation in myself to do something with my life and find something with my life that leads me to, you know, creating something, building something that is awesome and I can prove to everyone.
I love that. And at which point did you realize that you were on that track, that you were, it was beyond proving anyone, that you were just on the track because it was fulfilling you?
Well, that's the thing. So that was much later when I actually noticed, okay, damn, I'm still trying to prove myself and I should definitely stop because this will lead me to doing the quote-unquote wrong things, or this will lead me to be on another track and keep going endlessly because no one will ever, this will never stop. It has to come from myself. I have to be happy with myself, see my own worth, my own value, and know that I don't have to prove someone else anything, and I don't have to prove myself anything anymore. So that was for much later.
And was that recently? Was that when you had that journey?
Well, that was maybe a couple of years ago at some point. I think it, well, it's a good question. I don't know exactly, but it was definitely in my 20s. And so to go back to the teenage childhood, so I started, and I wrote my first business plan with 14.
Wow.
I found it. I think I maybe still have it somewhere. So I just saw it. It was just some idea I had, and I wanted to involve a family friend that we had, like an adult family friend. I never did anything with it, but I started thinking about these things. You know, that's my first like entrepreneurial start. And then over the next couple of years, I started, you know, looking a bit more over, what's it called in English? So basically looking for out of the box, you know. So instead of doing or being focused on the traditional school journey, I didn't necessarily like school very much. And I wasn't really motivated. I was more like medium good grades. In some areas I had better grades, you know, because I had better skills. But for a long time, I didn't really understand why I was supposed to do these things. And I was like, you know, towards the A-levels, I was like, why should I know all these math things? Like, why, when would I ever use them again in my life? And I just wasn't motivated. And I had like medium grades just to get through. But besides school, in my spare time, I started studying different things. For example, when I was around like 15 or 16, I think I started learning day trading and charts and stocks and these kind of things.
Wow.
I still remember, I at the end, never really traded for money at that time, but I did many different things like that, you know, learning. Then I got into personal development also with like 16 and listened to like Tony Robbins and
16,
all the different,
wow,
other things, and exploring different ways how you can build your dreams and create successful lives and learn and grow. And I was really motivated, and that was kind of the start of me getting on the journey and finding out what I can do with my life. And that, first of all, knowing that I can do something with my life, because I think that for many, sometimes it's for many, it has to be the start of, wow, there's more. There's more than the traditional journey. There's more than what I learned in school. There's more than the classic job choices that a consultant will tell me when I'm still in school. You know, you have these consultant days or whatever way they tell you about professions and things you can do. And then you got to pick some. And then you know, so there's more than that. And that was the cool thing for me, diving into this personal development growth world. I was like, wow, there is so much. There's basically anything, you know, I can, it's all open, you know, it just depends on me, my energy, my motivation, my willingness, my time, my effort. And I had all that and I put it in. And that was the start of the journey of exploring it all. Okay, what is there more than beyond the traditional education system, school system, job, profession?
I love that mindset because it really shows. I mean, I've, as long as I've known you too, it's, you constantly have this creative energy that you can, you switch like, okay, now I'm going to create this and now I'm going to create that. And there's this infinite reserve that I feel like you have of ideas and ways that, you know, I think that's so important for many people is that, you know, they'll try something and it doesn't work and then they don't know what they're stuck. They don't know what to do next. However, when you have this like gold mine of ideas, you're not really attached to just one. You try it, you enjoy it, you see if that lights you up, you see if that creates service in the world, if people are responding, and then if it sticks, you keep going, and then you allow your passions to guide you into whatever next project or next endeavors is truly aligned with you in that moment.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was probably one of the most important things and building blocks for all my future years and years of learning this approach of just trying different things and learning different things. And since I did it by myself, like out of school, I had all the choice. And there was the internet and there was the library and I had access to all this information and I could just like dive into anything I want to. No one was looking at it. No one was giving me grades for that. And I just did stuff. And then I tried different other things. I had a passion of photography and I tried to maybe do something with that can make money and do like stock photos or sell my photos somehow or create artworks. I tried that for a while, not really making money of it, but I just tried, you know, and I tried different other things. So that was just a nice journey of allowing myself to just play around. You know, I didn't have anything to lose because I was still living at home with my parents, my mom. So I had the freedom to do things and try without them needing to make money.
I love that. It's such a good mindset to have, especially as you're, you know, in this early, when you were in the early stages of your career and your entrepreneurial journey, you had this mindset of, okay, I have nothing to lose. I might as well try this. I might as well go with my passion. And I didn't have that mindset until after I left the corporate world, the Wall Street world. Well, I created my business as I worked in that time, though I didn't really allow myself too much flexibility until I got pretty far into my entrepreneurial career. Then I really started experimenting, though it was clunky for me at first because I thought, okay, if this doesn't work, this is my thing now. I, you know, there's a lot of pressure riding on that, especially coming out of a career where, you know, have a very comfortable income and then all of a sudden it's, okay, this is, I said I was going to do this thing. This thing has to work.
Yeah, knowing your story, I think it's pretty epic that you did let that go and decide to transition. So as a summary, for people that don't know you, you have completed your studies and you did very well. Like you did, I don't know how to call it in English.
It was called cum laude. It means it's part of the top of your class. They have these rankings.
Yeah, so I have no idea, still no idea how you did it.
Yeah, no idea how
you
did it.
You yourself, you don't even know how you did it, but you did it. And then you got hired by a big company on Wall Street. So
yes,
you didn't do engineering
did.
Stuff, but you ended up on Wall Street, which makes sense. That's how it works, you know?
Yeah, and, well, they want you to they basically were like, I would like you to re-engineer the way that our bank works. And they said, if anyone can fix our problems, it's the engineers.
Oh, that's interesting. You never told me
And
that.
This was during the time, this was in 2008, when Lehman Brothers went under, when Bear Stearns went under. I literally got the first day of my internship, it was my summer of junior year of college. So my summer before the last year. And I got there for the internship on day one. The new interns were, they were walking us into the building in Times Square. That's where I was interning, was in Times Square, where me and you biked down right there, right where the subway was and where the ball drops. And I'm walking into the office with all the other interns with like big eyes. And then we look across the street and there you see all these guys with cardboard boxes and they were wearing suits. And they, it was Lehman Brothers. And they thought,
epic, that's the dream job. They're all going
to
make space
for us. And we're all just
us.
Like, is that going to happen to us? And then the older people were like, no, no, you guys are the cheapest ones. Like, they're going to hire you and let us go. And I was
that's
like,
another a nice sentence. You're the cheapest ones.
The cheapest
they're going to hire you. Okay, cool. Nice to meet you. That's a great start.
But anyway, we were there to re-engineer the problems that were happening at that time in the financial industry. And they put me to work. And I have a very strong work ethic. I'm very devoted. So I'm a connector and I'm fun to work with, so I did just fine.
It's so funny to give a little summary. So I still don't really fully understand what you actually did during all the time. You were 7 years, right?
Seven and a half plus a summer internship.
Seven and a half, 8 years. So yeah, quite a long time. And you did well because you climbed up the ladder, you got some promotions, you earned good money, you had a nice penthouse, whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like you had lived a good
life.
And so again, I still don't really understand exactly what you did and how you did it and how that fits to your current personality. To me, it seems like it's a different person.
It totally is a different person.
I have no idea how you, now, going from you now, I have no idea how you were able to do it. And, but yeah, that's something, maybe I don't have to ever solve this question, but so just to give you, the listener, some background information here. So it's just super, super fascinating for me from that standpoint. Like, wow, how did that happen? And what did she do? And how is she the person she is now? And how did she do what she did then? So it's just, I'm confused.
It's wild, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like it's a different body.
But yeah, so 7.5 years, 8 years, something like that, then you eventually left. So how did that happen and why? You could still work there, I guess. Technically. If you would have been on a normal journey, what stopped you?
They wanted to promote me when I gave my notice, and I said nope. You couldn't even give me more raise, responsibility, anything.
Okay, so let me ask you a different question. When was the first moment during your Wall Street career when you had the thought of, okay, well, maybe this is not what I want to do forever?
Okay, so that's a really great question because I think it'll resonate with a lot of people that when I went to my very first yoga class on a lunch break, so you can picture this. I was working on Wall Street in a suit every day. Sometimes I was wearing pencil skirts, you know, those really tight little skirts, and my high heels. And instead of wearing tights, because a lot of times, because it wasn't really like, okay, you couldn't really wear bare legs. It was, you know, black tights under the skirts. So I would wear leggings, yoga leggings, like spandex yoga leggings under my skirts and wear these like cute little booties on my feet instead of high heels sometimes. So you couldn't tell that they weren't tights. And then under my suit, I would wear a sports bra and a button-up shirt. So I could easily just rip off the suit and get into Down Dog. And it was, I could walk 2 minutes outside my office in Brooklyn Heights because I worked in several offices, but this one was in Brooklyn Heights. And when I experienced my first yoga class, and I got into that class, and I was usually running and doing workouts after work. So this was a change, and it was more like I thought it was going to be just stretching. And I get into that class and I realize it's so much more. The teacher places her hands on my low back. I start crying when I was in child's pose, and I realize this is I was carrying a lot on my shoulders. And I realized through practicing yoga every day on my lunch break that I'm meant to do this. So even before I completed my teacher training, I started teaching classes at a library in the middle of like near Times Square.
So what year are we talking about?
2009, 2010.
So how many years into your career was that?
A couple years in. I started
in the middle?
Yeah, in the middle. And so I started teaching classes at a public library for free. It was for a community organization that my friend started. And even before I did my teacher training, I was already teaching yoga because I was practicing every day. And I embodied the practice so deeply, and I wanted to help people.
So just coming back to my initial comment at the beginning of saying like, hey, this is an example of people that you have your normal job, and then you still can have something else that fulfills you or is your purpose. That was kind of the first step, right? So you were doing that in the library beside your job that was sustaining you. You did something that was fulfilling you and giving you that purpose.
And I had kids in this class, like kids in the class in their teenage years. It was free class, public class. So I had kids, and then I had women in their women in her 70s that had Parkinson's. And she would be in the first row of my class, in every class, kind of sometimes putting the wrong foot forward, but smiling with the biggest smile. I ended up giving her private sessions too. She was amazing. Her son was a very famous movie director, and I would go to her house and give her sessions. And she was my favorite. She was my reason for showing up for that class. She was the best. And to this day, I'm forever grateful for her energy. And then during this time, I went on my very first yoga retreat to Rincon, Puerto Rico. And these two women rented this beautiful house in Rincon, Puerto Rico. And it was a surf and yoga retreat. And I'd surfed twice with my dad in Hawaii when we went on our father-daughter trips right before that. And so I said, this is the perfect opportunity to just take my days off work, my mandatory work days, and go on a yoga retreat. So I went on this retreat and I saw these two women and I was like, wow, I want to do what they're doing someday, you know, hosting retreats. So even before, this is still before I did my yoga teacher training, I started renting their house on my work holidays from my corporate job. And I would take 4 days to do these retreats. And I'd bring my BlackBerry. So I still had a BlackBerry at that time. And I would even like scroll through my messages, make it look like I'm online. And I would teach yoga retreats at this house.
So you didn't even have a yoga trainer?
Not yet. Still not yet.
Teacher training. Yeah.
I was about to do it. Though at this point when I led my very first retreat, I still wasn't certified yet. I had this knowing that I was teaching yoga at these huge public classes. So I was getting experience.
That's awesome though. I think it's a great example, because what is holding many people back is they think, oh, I need this license. I need this official thing. I need to have this approval that I can actually do this and teach this and share this.
I would say for teaching yoga though, once I did get my certification, it was very helpful, because you learn more than your own personal practice.
Of course, yeah.
Safety, you know, all those things.
I think it's just also something that you do these trainings because you actually do learn.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Okay, it's nice to have a license, but I was just saying, don't let yourself be
held back. Yeah.
Because you don't have the license or you don't have the money to make a license or whatever the time. Just, you know, do it. And if you feel you have something to share and you have the skills and experience, then just start helping people.
And this was the thing. I was committed to helping people. I said, okay, I'm going through this shift in my life. Everyone has to know about yoga. Everyone has to know that they can heal their own body. So at the time, again, during this time of working on Wall Street, I was diagnosed with an autoimmune thyroid condition called Hashimoto's hypothyroidism. So I knew I had a hypothyroid condition, but I didn't know that I had the autoimmune form of it, which was creating a lot of symptoms that I was absolutely miserable at the time. So I had all these symptoms in my body. I felt very weak. I was teaching yoga and moving my body, though I was pushing myself through many days at work. And so I was diagnosed with this condition and I realized I could heal myself because the doctors weren't really helping. So I was starting to eat cleaner. I was, you know, in my early days of working on Wall Street, I was warming up cans of soup and chicken in the microwave in the office.
Gosh, you told me about your college days.
Oof, my college days.
That was even more ridiculous.
So but
I just wanted to give the stage for you for this one moment you forgot to talk about. You always say in your story, which is very powerful, because this is another example.
Yes.
Another example, what can happen for people to help them find their purpose? Because sometimes you get inspired, you get ideas, whatever. But sometimes also there might be some more, let's say, drastic or intense moments in your life. Something happens to you or something happens for you, rather that can also inspire you and lead you into another direction, into another track. So stage three for your New York City subway moment.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to think, are you going to lead into that? So, yeah. So I fainted in the subway one day, and this was a day that I was going to work. I was dressed up. So you can imagine the high heels, the pencil skirt, the blazer. And I was in a busy subway on the way, like morning commute, New York City, subway's packed. And at the time I was on a new thyroid medication and on the birth control pill. And the two of them were clashing and my hormones were literally just going nuts. And so I fainted in the subway and I was I don't want to spare you all the, I'll spare you all the details because it was kind of gory, but I fainted and I didn't get trampled. I got to a crazy hospital, ambulanced, and I had a wake up call after that moment. I didn't leave my job right in that moment, but during that time I'd done my teacher training. I was on the track to leave my job. It took me a while to actually have the courage to leave because coming from a six-figure salary to teaching yoga, I had to build up a little bit more before I left. Yeah. Though I had a wake-up call for sure.
What do you think? How long did it take you from your wake-up call until you left your job?
It was a couple years. I had a business at the time with a business partner, and she was modeling at the time, and she also had decided to transition out of that and really focus on the wellness company.
Oh, was it your, what did you do with these like events?
We were doing retreats. So I started them on my own and then we started them together. And then we worked for a company called Aloha, which is, it's so funny because we were developing recipes and we were doing these press events and doing these brunch parties, dinner parties.
So that was all while you were still working.
All while I was still working on Wall Street. And I remember one time she said, okay, you're living a double life. And I had many mentors at the time that were all encouraging me to leave, like famous yoga teachers, amazing people in the juicing and wellness industry that were all like, they all were doing what I was doing, but not working on Wall Street.
Okay. That's super interesting because I just noticed when you described your wake up call moment, I just thought for myself, oh, I didn't really have a wake up call moment like that. And it's fine. It's just really cool. This episode, we talk about different things and different scenarios because there are so many different journeys in different ways. For me, I think, so I didn't have that wake up call moment like that because early on, I already was on my own journey.
Yes.
So to go back to my own story, so I left the school, what would it be, high school for your A-levels? Yeah, high school.
Mm-hmm.
I left it earlier, just before completing your A-levels in English.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, and you had your internship.
And then I had my internship. That was so over the course of the school years, you had to do an internship for 3 weeks. I did it in a local small company that was like graphic design, advertisement agency. But they were doing a lot of handiwork, crafts and signs and, car wrappings and prints. And it was pretty cool. And I found out, wow, this could be something that I like, going into graphic design. And I left school with 16 to do an apprenticeship over 3 years, which I said is equally to a bachelor, but then, without a bachelor, but 3 years studying part school, part-time in the company working. So much more practical for me. So I left school, did my A-levels, and I planned to study later because with the apprenticeship, I was also able to study at some universities later. So I thought maybe I do that, which didn't happen because after finishing my apprenticeship, I moved to London. I did another internship. I found out I want to stay there. I started becoming a freelancer, just very short. So I just started trying to make money as a freelancer, graphic design freelancer, dived into the startup community and did many different things. Just as a summary. So the summary is I basically my whole life, except the internship, I maybe had a normal quote-unquote job as employee for a couple months, if at all. And I was never an employee somewhere and had a job like that. So I was already on this journey for myself and finding out what I want to do and trying different things and doing different things. That's why I think I didn't have that wake-up call that you had, but I was just on a different journey.
Yeah, I think without getting too sidetracked, I think that we have different wake-up calls regarding, I think every human has different wake-up calls regarding different things in their life. Like some people, their wake-up calls around career. Some people, their wake-up call is around location. For example, yours was around maybe location or relationship. And everyone has different wake-up calls or spiritual awakenings, which is another topic for another time.
I'm just saying they don't have to be very...
They don't have to be
climaxing.
So intense.
They don't have to be. It can be. I think my wake-up call was more not a call. It was like over a couple of years when I started getting into personal development and learning all the things and finding out all the things. It was more like a rather process than a one-time thing.
I think also, too, we have wake-up calls throughout our career or as our passion. For example, this past year, I had a wake-up call that I no longer want to chef cleanse retreats, for example. And it happened over many times of, you know, doing cleanse retreats over and over and over again. And from the moment that I met you, I said, ah, I don't want to do any more of these like deep healing retreats. I want to create more celebration, more fun retreats, more trainings, you know?
You're jumping a little bit, but it's just a good reminder to say, yeah, of course, we can have different wake-up calls for different things
and different
intensities. But so that said, going back to your story, so that is the one thing that's similar to my story too, kind of. So you transitioned into doing something completely different while you still had your paying job.
Exactly.
And that was actually similar to me because I also had that for a couple of months. So I was in that internship where I everything was taken care of, my accommodation, all that. I didn't have to make money at that time. I had a couple of months to find out what I want to do. And then I was getting some other payments after from a previous job I did. So I had a little bit of time to explore and to try, you know, try how I can find clients as a freelancer and, you know, dive into the local startup community. I had some months without financial pressure to find that out and build it up, do my website, print my business cards, go to some events, talk to some people, did a couple first jobs for free or for very low prices just to build up my portfolio, you know. I had time to prepare these kind of things. And I think that was the same for you. So you had your day job and you just got by like that, and you on the side you build up your
There was a point
retreats.
Though where it was, okay, it was seed capital. Everyone was saying, okay, use your job and think of it as an angel investor, investing in your future, investing in your next teacher training.
I like that.
So I had basically my angel investor was my employer of Wall Street. And I used that as my angel investor for every single training I did. So during that time, I studied integrative nutrition and I became a certified health coach. I did other trainings as well during that time. And I went on retreats and did learning and study.
I like that.
And my angel investor treated me great. So I basically did a little bit of work for my angel investor. And then I went off and did the things that really made me so happy. And I think when I phrased it that way, I didn't have to think of it so much as, oh, I work on Wall Street, was that, oh, I have an angel investor. And I think that's a really great way for people who have other jobs and projects that are creating income to think of them as an angel investor in their well-being and in their career and in their spiritual growth. And then you're able to say, okay, this is funding me and I'm grateful for it rather than despising it and trying to leave.
Yeah, again, I love the metaphor. The metaphor of the investor, angel investor for yourself. Mm-hmm. That is another example for what I was trying to describe earlier, you know, that how you can use your classic 9-to-5 job to sustain yourself and then use that as security and then start using your time, because that's one thing, you know, one comment, and I love a guy called Gary Vaynerchuk. He's very fierce about these things, about, you know, motivation in terms of using your time. And because if you work a 9-to-5 job, that's just, you know, 8 hours or something of your day. And your day is 24 hours. So there's so much time that you can use to learn new things, to play around. Of course, you can have fun and hobbies and all that, but you can literally, work another half-time job at the same time and build up whatever you want to build up for yourself.
It just requires such commitment to the thing that you're learning and you're studying and you want to really make. It's really that devotion. I mean, I was doing it on my lunch break. I was teaching yoga on before work, after work, lunch break. I would leave the office and I would go, you know, take the train and do a private session, come back. You know, I was really making it work. And I got to a point of adrenal burnout. So I don't really want to suggest that to anyone, because in living my double life that I was, you know, working on Wall Street and teaching yoga and giving Reiki, because I also did that at the time too, was that I was burning myself out and needing basically what I was giving all my clients.
Yeah.
And that's the point. So I'll lead you into that. That's the point when I decided I needed to leave my Wall Street job because the lifestyle wasn't healthy anymore of trying to do all of it. And I knew there was a moment where I knew that spirit said to me, because at that point I was very spiritual, so I knew that spirit had spoke to me and said, it's time to leave the job. And that message came also in my mentors that are incredible yoga teachers and spiritual coaches that I could trust in. You know, it wasn't just me going out this alone. They saw me, what I really needed to see in myself. And they said, you know, this is your career. This is your life. You can do this. And I think that's a huge thing for people listening, is that If you're unsure of that direction, find people that are doing it or have done it and go under their wing and apprentice with them and learn with them and practice with them and, you know, get to know them. And that will give you more courage, because if they did it, so can you. Both of my main mentors at that time also had previous lives and previous careers that they stopped. I mean, one of them was in marketing and advertising, and the other one was doing some other things as well. And it showed me, wow, they wouldn't have been as nearly as successful in the yoga space if they hadn't left those former careers as well.
Yeah, that's another great example why I like stories so much. You know what I said at the beginning, I love to listen to other people's journeys and life journeys. Oftentimes they are so rich in different turns and things, and it's a normal way too for us to kind of get caught up in the traditional way of things and by many different factors in society and parents, and get led onto tracks that we then later find out are maybe not as true to us as we think or as we told ourselves. And I wanted to touch on your point of the burnout though, because that's a super important thing, which is also connected to the part that I shared earlier of my story of wanting to prove myself, you know, because that was exact same reason for me that I didn't have a burnout necessarily in that sense, luckily, but I was heavily moving towards that due to many different reasons. And one reason was the motivation of me of, okay, yeah, the fire, the drive of, yeah, I have to prove myself. I want to prove, I show everyone. And that's why, okay, I wanted to, you know, I got in the startup community. I wanted to build a big company. And then you see all these successful people, all the millionaires and all the startup unicorns that get sold to big companies.
Startup
and
I was like, wow, unicorns.
Yeah, I want to do that. I want to build up a startup and then I want to sell it. And I'm, you know, going to be, you know, of course, received abundance. But it was more about the building up something big and making it happen, you know, that kind of thing. And that's good. That's okay, you know. And at the same time, much later, I learned that my motivation behind that, my fire, my drive, it that only comes from I want to prove to others, or I want to prove to myself. I think maybe it shifted more to myself at some point. That is not a healthy motivation. And this will possibly lead me to decisions and tracks that are not really healthy for me and not really truly aligned with me. That's exactly what happened. So I was in the startup journey and tried different things and all that, and I was working like crazy. I dedicated my whole life to it at that time. So I was working nonstop Monday to Sunday until late at night. Sometimes I had like crazy hours because I had to kind of do what you described too. I had to do my freelance work that was making money actually, and like a normal full-time job already, and especially living in more expensive places like London. For you it was New York, for me it was London, UK. And I had to make enough money, and at the same time I was working on other projects, like startups I co-founded and that didn't make money at that time, and many of them never made money. So I was working on many different things and earning shares in different projects, and like, so I was totally ridiculous with my hours. Sometimes I was working like 14, 15, 16 hours per day. Like, I don't even know how I did it. Super crazy. And then eventually I found out, okay, wow, this is coming from a really unhealthy motivation, and this will never have an end, because it only can be solved by myself, knowing that I'm worthy, and give myself all the love and the self-love and the self-appreciation, and knowing that I don't need to prove myself to anyone anymore, and I don't need to prove myself to myself anymore, and letting all that go to allow me to then actually find my true calling, the true way of life. And yeah, maybe I still would want to build up big companies and do all the same, or maybe I would want to do something else. And that's what I had to find out.
I think that's also a beautiful reminder that we have flexibility to change, and flexibility in allowing ourselves to say, nothing has to be an ultimatum of saying, I'm never going back into this again. And even though I say that, yeah, I'm never going back to Wall Street, and that's for sure. Though, you know, you can also have this flexibility to have different projects and have different passions and explore, and giving yourself the permission slip, because no one else needs to give it to you.
Yeah. And so what I found, my time doing these things, I loved it. You know, it was not that I did something that I didn't like so much. I was super passionate about the hustle culture, working like crazy, startup stuff and building things and putting all my time in. It had, and even living in the big city, like that all had enjoyable parts to it, even like kind of addicting parts to it. The only thing that it wasn't really sustainable and it didn't really come from a healthy motivation. That's just what I found out and that's what led me to change. So that said, it's amazing to allow yourself to be open to change and allow yourself that you find out new things about yourself, allow yourself to end things, allow yourself to play around and even starting something. You know that it's more like an experiment and you will find out how it goes. And yeah, just be more easy with the possible results or the changes that you learn are necessary.
Absolutely, especially with, let's say you start up a brand or a company and then you realize, actually, I put my heart and my soul into this and it doesn't have, you don't have to tie yourself to that brand forever. So for example, I created something called Thyroid Yoga, which was back in 2013 when I was healing my body and wanting to share all the things that I found with women that didn't have those resources available to them yet. And at that time, I was on this forefront of holistic health. I was with all these leaders learning how to give the body nutrition and sustenance from a place of natural therapy versus, you know, conventional medication and yoga poses, sequences, techniques, somatic exercises. And that was my pride and joy. That was lighting me up so much. I was really feeling in such big service with it, and it was my passion. And I did that for over 10 years. And it got to a point where I actually, just like 2 years ago, I decided, okay, my passion now is singing and breathwork, and that is where I want to devote all my time and energy. So at that moment, I decided, okay, I'm going to sell thyroid yoga. And that was a decision that was also very heartbreaking for me because it was something I built up for so long. And I didn't think I was actually even allowed to give it up.
Yeah, and I think that's also a great example of the situation where your purpose can be temporary, or let's say, I mean, it's all for you. For example, it's all connected to helping people, right? Mm-hmm. But it can be in different ways. And maybe sometimes your purpose can be just over a certain amount of time, or to lead into someone else taking over. I think it's so versatile. It can be so different. So for you, for example, it could be, yeah, you were at that time, you were contributing to something that wasn't really existing so much, and you were kind of one of the first in that space, and you're really helping together with other people to, you know, build up this yoga and health space and bring your own unique twist into it, and yeah, with doing something for the thyroid and kind of like holding up the torch for, yes, like 10 years or so. Yeah. And I think that's fine, you know, then there are more and more people doing it and different other people and more consciousness, more awareness and more support. So then you can be like, okay, you know, I did my part. I did it. My 10 years or so, mm-hmm, and contributing to this cause, whatever it is, over a while. And now it's time for me to move on to.
And it's allowing that new iteration or that new version of myself to shine, you know, as someone who guides breathwork and vocal activation and DJing. And it's like a new version of myself. If, for example, if I always held on to Wall Street Fernie and Wall Street, you know, the Wall Street version of me, I never would have explored the yoga version of me and the next version of me. And so the thing I'm learning, and it doesn't mean that I need to sell thyroid yoga, because the sale, it never really worked out in passing the torch and selling my brand, because the brand was actually me and the example of me leading that revolution. And so I decided to keep thyroid yoga, yet like evolve it with the breath work, as you've been guiding me along that path to actually merge my embodied voice breath work with thyroid, yeah, yoga, to be of keep being of service.
I mean, you were kind of on and off with it, and I remember I tried to help you sell it, like, and by selling it sounds like, you know, selling like a big company for millions. It's not what we mean. It's more like you finding a new person that can take it over and, you know, uses your brand and your, you know, website, mm-hmm, and assets and videos, email lists, and continues building on that. It wasn't like a big sale that will, it's not about
Unfortunately,
money.
Unfortunately, right? Everyone wanted me for, they wanted videos of me for thyroid yoga, yeah. And they didn't want someone else, like a new face.
Yeah, so, which makes sense. But to come back to this happening, generally, I think it makes sense because you are evolving as a person. We all are evolving as people. And the more conscious and dedicated we are, and the more we love learning and growing, and the more we are into all these personal development things, the more we evolve and the faster. So yes. I think it's natural that we reshape whatever we do to how we live and fulfill our purpose. And so it totally made sense that you also learn new skills, you found out new passions, and then the next step was, speaking for you, the next step was to finding out how you can connect it to what you did before.
Yes.
And without, you know, selling it all and giving it all away and stop it completely, it was more like, okay, maybe, and this was happened because you tried to push it all away, but it came back and it came back and it came back and people wanted you and you noticed, wow, you can actually help people. And then maybe it's just about reshaping it and combining it or expanding it.
Yes.
Right?
And organizing it in a way that all the old content that I created that's so magnificent and healing and helpful, when I watch those old videos, I light up because I'm like, wow, that version of me was in her journey. You know, like I see that version of me that's on camera and on video, and I see the power of this, of the work that I was doing with thyroid yoga and seeing how it had healed my body. And looking at those videos with such joy, connecting to this younger version of myself and saying that was powerful and that still exists, you know, like that, those videos that I have are still so powerful. I don't have to keep creating those same videos, right? Like I can keep those videos and at the same time create these powerful breathwork journeys, vocal activation journeys, and then offer everything, you know, and it doesn't, you don't have to throw out those old versions of you that still made a huge impact.
So another lighthouse moment. Do you call it like that?
Lighthouse? Yeah, I could
like it.
Light bulb lighthouse?
No, that I want to share. Yeah, it's like another like key takeaway or whatever.
I love key takeaways.
We had key takeaway for myself would be, which is also similar to my journey that I had, was always the question, okay, and the coming back to that circle of like, okay, how can I take all that I did before and take my past skills and learnings and experiences and taking that into whatever I create new? And that could be the same for you as a listener. For example, let's say you have a job that you do that's probably not necessarily fulfilling you or your purpose directly. And still, maybe there's a reason why you became accountant or, you know, designer, doctor, whatever it was, you know, why you did that and how we can use the skills. And for me, I still love to do, so after design, graphic design, I did a lot of like tech stuff, UI, UX design, web design, like building apps and all these things that I don't really do anymore, except for the work I do for myself and for us. I still love to do design, creative things, and I learned all these skills and make it much more easy for me to use it for myself now, for myself as a musician, for us as Pranamore. I'm still involved in one startup that was always left after all these years and decades, and I love it. So I still have my weekly things where I can actually do what I used to do in the tech world in a little scale, and that's really cool for me because it's just, I still love it, and I worked so many, many years and decades building up all these skills and experiences, still using them. So I think that's just cool. Same for you to, okay, use all your skills and your experiences and just like, you know, connect them to whatever new you want to create.
I think that's a big key takeaway, is how to basically take a treasure trove. Like if you think of a treasure chest and you put in, maybe this is even a journaling prompt for after, and you put in all these skills and, you know, from years and years of working and sharing your talents and your gifts in whatever capacity you've had them, you know, putting these, like writing everything down and then putting a star next to all the ones you actually really love to use. Because for example, I'm a whiz at Excel spreadsheets. You know, I know how to make databases and macros and automations and all these things. And so, okay, yeah, I can use that to, you know, catalog our retreats and things like that. But is that a skill that I love? And putting together all the different skills that you have and really understanding what do you really love to do out of all those things And I think that's a very tangible tool, a very tangible takeaway that can help you guide yourself to your purpose. Because if you start to understand these really practical skills that you have, instead of just saying, okay, I love to, like for me, I love to be at the beach. I love to take people to the beach. I know these are very, you know, basic things, but I love guiding Qigong. I have Qigong certification. I have water rebirthing certification. So when I think of what I love to do and where I love to be, and then I look at all the skills that I have, you can easily determine that I don't like to do spreadsheets. I love...
Well, you're not the person that's sitting in the office or creating something alone. The notion here would be like you love to work with people.
Exactly.
You like talking, you like interacting, you like meeting people. So you would be looking for something that involves being with people.
Exactly. And I think it's for those of you who are, you know, not quite sure of where to start with going into the next direction yet, I think it's really, really one of the most basic things is you'll start to celebrate all your skills. And you get to realize that you have all these different tools in your toolkit that can guide you into the next version of yourself. You get to kind of, you know, they had these lists, I remember as a child, and you'd have one column on one side and one column on the other side. And you start to connect the dots, like, okay, these are all the things I like to do on the left side. These are all the certifications or all the, you know, the skills, the trainings that I've had on the right side. And then you can also make another column of the trainings you want to have, like what will actually get you to the place you want to be. Maybe there's courses online you can take that are, you know, webinars, or, you know, they don't have to involve like a year-long certification, but an immersion, workshops, what can help you get to, because it doesn't just happen overnight of, okay, now I can do this, maybe. But a lot of the time it involves some study and some practicality of taking that education and that wisdom into something where you feel really confident to go into that next step.
Yeah. I remember I gave a talk once and a presentation, and then I had this graphic that I drew. It was basically three circles. One was what I'm passionate about, what I love to do. One was what skills and talents I have. And one was what is economically, what has economic potential. So, and all these three things were overlapping, and you are looking for the sweet spot in the middle, and that is basically what you do, as a very simplified version of what you just described. And I think here's so much more to explore. For example, when you just talked, I got reminded about all the, you know, personal characteristics, like personality tests that I did. I love personality tests, and they're all the different types and different ones. And then the whole field of awareness. I think that's finding out what is my purpose. For me, it was really finding out who I am more. Finding out who I am, becoming more self-aware on all the different levels of, you know, on a personal level, on a job level, on all the different levels, which is a big, big thing. And so we talked already for quite a while, and I think that there's so much more to explore. So my idea would be to do a version, like a V2, and continuation of this podcast. Do a second episode of the fourth episode, so to speak.
I love this. So fourth episode, part two.
Yeah, exactly. Put it into simple words. Fourth episode, part two. And so curious about your feedback, you as a listener, your thoughts and your feedback so far. Super curious about any realizations, any experiences, anything you want to share. Connect with us, please.
Yes. And if you know me from the past, my past Wall Street days, and you're listening, or past my past life, you know, teaching yoga in the libraries in New York City, or, you know, student at some point, like, say hi. I want to know that we're still together on this path.
Yeah, that would be so fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Connect with us. I, you know, one of my favorite things is this was really cool that one of my friends from Entrepreneurship Club in college at Syracuse University listened to the podcast, and she wrote me on Facebook. And that,
oh, she
I
did.
Didn't tell you that yet. Yeah. One of my best friends friends in college from Entrepreneurship Club. And little shout out to you, Andrea. So that was the, you know, like...
So what did you say?
She just was like, whoa, this is amazing. Love seeing this new version, like this new life, you know, watching, you know, seeing us. And yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So she's in the Northeast, I think New Jersey, but I'm not sure. I have to check, you know, with a husband and a baby. And it's really cool to see, wow, that was, you know, I graduated in 2008 from college. She was 2009.
Yeah,
so
a long time ago.
Very, very long time ago. And to see... seeing where the listeners are finding us from and know us from. Maybe it's you've just started to get to know us as Pranamore, and maybe we've had some, you know, past lives together in college or Wall Street or tech world or something. So yeah, definitely say hi. It's so cool to see how our paths are merging again here.
Yeah. Beautiful ending. So I'm very excited to welcome you again for the part two of episode four, which will be coming next week.
Next week. So yeah, our episodes are every week. So definitely stay tuned. And in the meantime, if you'd like to connect with us, it's very easy. We're at Pranamore Musica on Instagram, or you can check out the show notes and connect with each of us there too.
Everything in the show notes, including some goodies and all the information. So take care. And see you next week.
Enjoy your cacao. Make sure that you enjoy your cacao with us on these episodes. If you'd like to make cacao, we have a video for that as well. So you can learn how to make that ceremonial cup of cacao that you can enjoy with us during the podcast. Much love.
Bye.